You please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Bless. Amen. It's wonderful to be connecting with you all this morning through the means of internet. Rick Bohr sent me a funny this morning, and it's entitled, Without God, Our Week Should Be, or Would Be, Sin Day, and then they would be Mourn Day. And Tuesday would be Tears Day. Wednesday would be Wasted Day. Thursday would be Thirst Day. Friday would be Fight Day. And Saturday would be Shattered Day. 7 days without God makes one weak. W-E-A-K. And I thought that was very cute. Reading from one of Mother's favorites and mine as well, Khalil Gibran on the Prophet. And this title is On Giving. Then a rich man said, Speak to us of giving. And he answered, You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep and guard for fear you may need them tomorrow? And tomorrow? What shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog bearing bones in a trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? And what is fear of need but need itself? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full the thirst that is unquenchable? Isn't that wonderful? Is not dread of thirst when your well is full a thirst that is unquenchable? There are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gifts unwholesome. And there are those who have little and give it all. There are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. And there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as yonder valley, the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Through the hands of such as these, God speaks, and from behind their eyes, he smiles upon the earth. It is well to give when asked, but it is better to give unasked through understanding. And to the open-handed, the search for one who shall receive is joy greater than the giving. And is there aught you would withhold? All you have shall someday be given. Therefore, give now, that the season of giving may be yours and not your inheritors. You often say, I would give, but only to the deserving. The tree in your orchard says not so, nor the flocks in your pasture. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. Surely he who is worthy to receive his days and his nights is worthy of all else from you. And he who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill his cup from the little stream. And what desert greater shall there be than that which lies in the courage and confidence, nay, the charity of the receiving? And who are you that men should rend their bosom and unveil their pride, that you may see their worth naked and their pride unabashed? See first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. For in truth, it is life that gives unto life, while you who deem yourself a giver are but a witness. And you receivers, and you who are all receivers, assume no weight of gratitude, lest you lay a yoke upon yourself and upon him who gives. Rather, rise together with the giver on his gifts as on wings. For to be overmindful of your debt is to doubt his generosity, who has the free-hearted earth for mother and God for father. Isn't that beautiful? And so true. And from Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, God Talks with Arjuna, entitled Three Kinds of Giving. This comes from chapter 17, verse 20. The good or sattvic gift is one made for the sake of righteousness, without expectation of anything in return, and is bestowed in proper time and place on a deserving person. That's the quote from the Gita. And Master's commentary, a gift, or what is in India is called dana, D-A-N-A, dana. A gift that is presented to a worthy person without thought of receiving for any kind of compensation is sattvic, or virtuous in nature. The man who gives with no strings attached to the deserving person is pure-hearted. Paradoxically, such a gift brings the donor the greatest spiritual benefit, precisely because he does not seek it. The habit of giving breaks down gradually the walls of separation between God and man, and leads the devotee to offer to the Lord the ultimate gift of the surrender of his soul. When he makes a gift of his soul to God through love, without expectation of any return of divine favor, he has passed life's highest test. I'll read that again so that we can emblazon it in the mind. When he makes a gift of his soul to God through love, without expectation of any return of divine favor, he has passed life's highest test. The Lord, who has everything except the love of his prodigal child, man, if the Heavenly Father may be said to need anything, it is the love of his runaway children, roaming in delusion. He wants them back for their own happiness and for his happiness too. He feels responsible for them. Who but he created Maya and the labyrinths of misery? What rejoicing he feels when he receives the unconditional love of his children. There are three kinds of sattvic gifts, material, mental, and spiritual. On the physical plane, to give food and money to a poor man is good. To give him a job is better. To help him become well qualified to obtain work is better still. Continued material aid to a man makes him enslaved and dependent. So it is laudable to encourage him to remedy his ills by self-help. On the mental plane, to aid an enlightening or ignorant person is good, and to offer further education to an intelligent man is better, for he can be more helpful to many others. On the spiritual plane, to give elevating instruction to a willing man whose life has hitherto been sunk in materialism is good. To impart divine wisdom to an ardent seeker is better. To aid an advanced devotee so that by his own enthusiasm and knowledge, he can win emancipation is better still. To bestow God consciousness on a worthy disciple by the transmission of ecstasy or samadhi is the best of all. Only illumined gurus can transfer their divine realization to those of their disciples who are ready for the sublime experience. Every prophet quantitatively helps society. The masses around him who respond with little and or some slight inner development. But qualitatively, he concentrates on raising a small group to supreme spiritual stature, as did Jesus, Lahiri Mahasaya, and others. As one moon sheds on the world a greater light than the countless stars, so a Christ-like disciple who receives the gift of God communion through self-effort and through his guru's transmission of ecstasy inspires and redeems thousands by his illuminating spirituality. The act of giving transmits physical or material power, mental power, or spiritual power from the qualified person to another man who needs that aid. In order to bestow money, wisdom, or divine consciousness on others, one must first have acquired those possessions himself. They should then be used to help his fellow man. Through sympathy and a deep vision, a true guru sees the Lord suffering in the physical, mentally, and spiritually poor, and that is why he feels it is his joyous duty to assist him. He tries to feed the hungry, God in the destitute, to stir the sleeping God in the ignorant, to love the unconscious God in the enemy, and to awaken the half-sleeping God in the yearning devotee. And by a gentle touch of love, he instantaneously arouses the almost fully awakened God in the advanced seeker. A guru is, among all men, the best of givers. His generosity, like that of the Lord himself, knows no boundaries. And today I would like to talk about the giving tree. This world that we live in has trained us many times to seek rewards for those things that we do. If we are a good little boy or little girl, then our parents and those around us will reward us with something in return. And then we go to school, and if we do so well on tests, then we earn ourselves a certain kind of grade. And so on, and so we become inculcated into this idea that as we give, so shall we receive. As we perform, so shall we receive. And we don't think of giving to others except perhaps as it reflects on us. Jesus talked about those who went to the temple and ostentatiously gave something of their great wealth. And they expected and received much credit for what they had given. But he decried that kind of giving because it is ego-based. It's not something that comes from the heart. It is not something that is selfless. It is really difficult to give and not expect anything in return. I remember the first time that I was at an ashram, and Christmas Day and Mother's Birthday, of course, come on the same day. And at the ashram, they don't celebrate any of the Hindu holidays, much less any of the Western holidays. And so that day was just as much like any other. But weeks before, I had bought a nice tape recorder because theirs was malfunctioning and the speakers were all burned out. So I had been in the nearest city and purchased this, brought it back with me, kept it underneath my bed for the time, for those weeks. And then finally the day came. And normally I would go and sit with Swamiji in the evening. And with very few exceptions, this occurred every night. This is one exception that happened. He was having some kind of a board meeting that night. And so with great anticipation, I approached his door without knowing that a meeting was going on. And very unusual, the door was closed. So I knocked on it and somebody answered, and I asked if I could see Swamiji. There's a little bit of a kerfuffle, but then Swamiji came. And he said he's sorry, but that this board meeting was going on and I wouldn't be able to sit that night with him. And so I said this had been Mother's birthday and Christmas and I wanted to give him this gift. And he rather distractedly accepted it, and off into the corner it went. And I don't think I ever saw it again. So it challenged me a little bit, because I had anticipated being able to give it to them, that it would be something that they needed and would be well received. So with barely an acknowledgement at all. So it taught me a great lesson in detachment, because I saw other instances. There's a wonderful artist at the ashram. Her name was Lakshmi. She's now called Gargi. And she had done a beautiful, beautiful painting of Papa. And she had brought it, and I think she perhaps had brought it a few times before while it was in process, but it was finally finished. And I could see she was feeling very pleased about it. And she was not yet living at the ashram. Later on, she lived full-time at the ashram, but at that time, she was visiting. And Swamiji just, he took a look at it, and he just nodded his head, and that was it. No exclamations of how wonderful it was and what a work of art she did. Nothing of the sort, because she was being trained to come to the ashram, and you don't seek anything out like that if you're going to be an inmate at the ashram. So he just simply nodded, and that was it. It was acceptable. And I was really struck by this. I felt a little sorry for her because I could see the expectation that she had had. However, I hadn't needed to feel sorry for her, because as I learned more about Swamiji, that nod from him could mean more to her than all the words in the world that he could express in admiration. And besides, in giving selflessly, we give without thought of reward, without expectation that others should take notice and see what we're doing. One time, I had been doing a lot of service for God and didn't feel like there was much coming back in return. And I was feeling a little bit sorry for myself. So I was commiserating with God in my meditation about this. And suddenly, he unfolded this entire scenario for me, where God gives everything to us all the time. He gives us this worldly manifestation. He gives us all the good things of this earth. He is constantly expressing himself through the gifts that we give. But who acknowledges those gifts? The gift of food, the gift of air that we breathe, the gift of sunshine, the gift of vitality of life and comradeship, all the things that he expresses himself in this world. And rather than giving thanks, rather than making this a bountiful planet, which it is, enough for everyone, we fight over the crumbs. We draw lines in the sand and say, this side is mine and that side is yours, and don't you dare cross over onto my side. And if you do, there's a war. And that's just the way we treat his constant giving to us. To receive is just as equally important as knowing how to give. One time, Mother just asked me, it seemingly out of the blue, why is it so difficult for you to receive, she asked. She said, you'd much rather give. And I said, that's right. It's a lot easier and more fun to give than it is to receive. I really didn't know how to receive. So she went on to say, you know the joy that you feel when you give to others. But if you do not receive, you do not allow others to experience that joy of giving. So giving, when it is done properly, when it is done with a full heart, is something that is really inspiring and gives joy to both the giver and the receiver. And who of us are not receivers? Receivers first from God, that the spark of life should come into this body, that breath should come, and that we should have the air to breathe, that the mother's milk flows to us, that food comes to us, and so on. It is really tremendous when we think about everything that we receive. Then if we go inside, and we go into the laboratory of our own existence within this body, and we discover, through the writings perhaps at first of Master and others, that we are being fed by a life energy, that Jesus talked about the mouth of God, and that all of life is expressed out through the mouth of God. And Master explained that this is at the base of the skull, as the yogis well know, and that it is through here that the life energy streams in and comes into the brain and electrifies the brain and enlivens it, and then goes down the spine and is distributed out to the body through all the nervous system. And that this vital life energy is in truth what keeps us going from our first breath to our last. You withdraw that life energy and it doesn't make any difference. You can stuff food into the mouth. You can try to force air into the lungs, and life may continue in some kind of minimal way, but it will be withdrawn as soon as those supports go away from it, because the life energy is drawing out. Now, when the life energy leaves this body, it goes out through the ajna. It gets withdrawn through the back of the skull. But the ajna is that point between the eyebrows. And that is why people most often turn their eyes upwards when they leave this body. The whole life energy unconsciously is being drawn up. And we see that, as has been talked about with near-death experiences, we see that tunnel of light. That occurs at the ajna. And we are being drawn into that tunnel of light and into the next stage of existence for us. And for most people, that means entering into the astral worlds. And if you've had a more or less average existence in this world, then you are drawn into that astral world and you begin a life there. And first you review this life, and you do it without the impairment of having physical consciousness. You're more attuned to the divine because you're now in the astral consciousness, and you see what you have done well in this world and what you have not done so well at. And with that superior consciousness, aided by divine beings who are helping us in reviewing this life, we learn something. And sometimes we come out with a greater determination that the next time that we live, we'll live better. We'll live in closer connection with truth, harmony with God consciousness and nature. And so we gradually grow through evolution, lifetime by lifetime. We refine ourselves. We get better. We understand more. And you see that in children. Some children come into this world and they're very wise from the very beginning. They may have some challenges to face, but they have an innate wisdom about them. And others are a little bit of a wild hare, and they just seem to be headed for trouble in every direction. Now, sometimes great souls come in and they are that wild hare, and they will live quite a life. And then one day something suddenly awakens them to the higher life, and they use all of that life energy to go to God. And it's tremendous. They are like a rocket that takes off and zooms by everybody else, making them look as if they're standing still because they have such an intense desire to know God. These are wonderful souls, wonderful souls. But one time, Master was doing a baptism, and he suddenly had a shocked look on his face. And later on, he told that he almost dropped that baby, because as he held the baby, he saw that this soul who had incarnated in this baby had been a murderer in his last lifetime. And it shocked him. Maybe he wasn't so sure he wanted to be holding him. And yet, you look at it, and here's this innocence of a little baby, but surely enough, he would have to carry all of those things that he had built in prior lifetimes into this lifetime. So one of the great lessons that we have to learn is about giving, and that we don't give just to receive. We give in order that we might be an instrument of divine consciousness. There is a built-in reward, so to speak, for giving in this way, because when you give, you feel the joy of God. You feel the life of God. You feel the light of God. But even further renunciation means that you don't even seek that joy. But you give because it's your nature. You could not not give, just in the same way that you could not not breathe being in this world. You have to give because it is your nature. And not to give would kill you, would bring you into a degraded state. And you just can't stand that. You want that attunement. You want that light. You want that life of God. So this is the way that you learn to give. You give as the myrtle tree gives, or as the cedar tree gives here in the Northwest, that if it is cut into with an axe, what does it do? It exudes the most wonderful fragrance. And this is the way that it is with God-tuned souls. You give because it is your nature, and if you are cut into, you exude even more that nature. Jesus demonstrated that when he was unarguably in one of the worst positions life can present to you, when he was up on the cross. So they've nailed into his hands and to his feet, and he's hanging there, and he's in extreme pain. He's already been beaten before that. So he's in really bad shape. But he looks down and he sees his mother. And he sees his beloved disciple, John, next to her. And he says, "Mother, behold your son," as he's looking at John. And as he looks at John, he says, "Son, behold your mother." He's forming a bond between the two of them. He's caring about them and wanting to make sure that they have the comfort and the protection of each other as they go forward. And so he's concerned about others. Then he says, "God, forgive them," thinking of all of these forces that have come to put him up on this cross, "for they know not what they do. They operate in ignorance." So he's giving a prayer for them. "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." What a magnificent example to us all of how to live our lives, of how to give, even in the most extreme examples of that life can present to us, that we give because it is our nature. When you have your heart center open up, your heart wants to flow out with love. It can't help it. That's all that it wants to do. And to stop it, to dam it up, would create a tremendous strain and pressure inside of you, because you are used to that full river of love flowing through your heart. In divine consciousness flows in from the back of your head and illumines your mind and brings you great truths. And it naturally wants to express itself to this world. Now, it can do so silently. And as I've told before, when I was up in Dwarahut, and I was up on the top of the rooftop in the middle of the night, and a beautiful full moon was coming up, and there are two planets on each side of it that looked like two eyes and an immense ajna that was opened up. And so I felt so inspired. It was a beautiful, warm evening or night. And so I was meditating for quite some time, and then I stood up, and there is a little half wall there, and I stood against this half wall, And down below from the ashram is a ravine that goes quite far down. And then up on the other side, it comes up into Dronagiri Hill or mountain. And there is a small Hanuman temple that's up on the top of there. And there is a light that was burning there. So it's just this beautiful, beautiful setting. And this full moon was illuminating everything as bright as a cloudy day would be. So bright it was, casting shadows. And then suddenly, there was just this gust of spiritual power that flowed down around the mountain, Dronagiri, and then down through this ravine and out to the world. It was like a gust of wind that can just come up and then almost instantly die down. And then there is another gust of spiritual power. And one after another were flowing by me. And what God showed me within was that there were meditating yogis up in these hills. And through their inner attunement and power, they were sending out these tremendous spiritual vibrations going out to the world. This spiritual power coming as gust after gust after gust, going out to this world to help to purify it and to uplift it. It was a tremendous experience. And so it doesn't even take words in order to give. You can give of your entire spiritual being through prayer, through the spiritual power passing through you, which is the greatest form of prayer. Because real prayer goes beyond words. When you pray and you connect with God within you, spiritual power, just as when we are seeking to do when we're doing our healing ohms, we are sending out spiritual power. And even so, without doing any healing ohms, it can happen naturally within you. Some person comes to mind. Some situation comes into your head. And you feel that spiritual power go out from you. And as surely as the sun rises, you know that that individual is receiving that spiritual power. Or it may be a group, or it may be a situation in the world, and the power of God is flowing through you. Now, you of yourself have no means to give that. It is God Himself who is giving it through you. So there is no arrogance, there is no ego involved here, because it is God, and you know clearly, this is not of me. It doesn't originate with me. Even the idea of who to pass that spiritual power on does not come from me. There may be others who you have tremendous compassion and love for, and yet God does not pass that same power through you to them. So it is strictly of His choosing and His knowingness of what is right and what to do at a particular time. This is a tremendous aspect of giving, is being able to give at the right time, just giving for the sake of giving. Sometimes parents will give in to a child and to their wants or their whims, but this is not good because it spoils the child and they begin to expect it. They are now looking for what they can receive, not what they can give. Now, of course, we give to children, but we don't give to them out of ransom, because they're misbehaving, so we give them something. We give them when God inside tells us to give. And other times we may even want to give to them, but God within withholds Himself from us because there's a lesson there for them to learn. So you give as God teaches you to give. You receive when God teaches you to receive. One time an individual came up to me, and I had given some money to an individual so that they could make a pilgrimage. And they were very upset about this. And they said, this person said, "Do you know how much I have given to you?" And I said, "No, I don't keep track of such things." "Well, I think that you should, and you should publish it all, and who gives you and how much." And I said, "I'm not going to do that. That's not how God operates in this form." And he's very, very upset. So he, because he is so upset, I said, I willingly give you all back the money that you've given to me. But since you expect me to keep an accounting of what you have given me, I want you to give me an accounting down in paper, black and white, which you've given to me. And when you do, I will give you all the money back that you've given through the years. Well, I never saw the piece of paper or the accounting, so it's still in limbo. But that's not the way to give, because we give with some expectation that we should get something in return, or that we can control the person that we've given something to. When you give, you truly give with your whole heart, and you release it. What they do with that gift is up to them. And when you do it as a prompting from God, then it is God himself who has given through your form. And you don't mind. You take joy in the fact that you have done as God has asked you to do. Now, you may see somebody misusing their life, misusing things that have been given to them, and you may see where they're building a negative dark karma for themselves as a result. And you see all of that. But it doesn't affect the inner you, because the inner you is something that is untouched by this world when you really get connected with your true self. And this pertains to relationships in our life, that when we give anything, it may be a small service, it may be a gift, it may be anything to a family member, to a beloved one, to a friend, to anyone at all. And we give it without expectation of return. Now that's a tough one, isn't it? Husbands and wives oftentimes, most times I would say, have some kind of invisible tally sheet. Well, I've done this for you, and what have you done for me? And if it doesn't look like it's getting balanced very well, then there's upset that goes on there. And you have to examine yourself when that happens. Are you giving because God inside of you has prompted you to give, or are you giving with an idea that you're going to get something in return? And so when we give as God prompts us to give, we really free ourselves. We free ourselves from those tally sheets. We free ourselves from karma. And then we are giving. And then one day God may say, all right, that's enough. Don't give any more. And that may challenge us just as greatly, because we conceive of ourselves as a good person, a giving person, and suddenly he's saying, no, don't give here. And you instantly obey him just as you did as when he prompted you to give. And so your life becomes like a dance in this world. Sometimes you step in, sometimes you step out. You move in accordance with how he directs you to go. And this is the greatest freedom in the world. That is what true giving gives to you, is freedom. And then God gives back to you in so many tremendous ways you can't even count it. He gives to you spiritually, he gives to you mentally, he gives to you materially, in all different ways. And you stand in awe and wonder as he continues to give to you. Now, sometimes you think you need something, and maybe it doesn't come right away. But really, how many things in this world do we really need? And when you count them up, you can count them on one hand. There are really very few of things we absolutely need in order to keep us going. So many things are wants and desires. They're not true needs. So God gives us what we truly need at any particular moment. And sometimes he may give us as a test. He may give us a great boon of wealth, or a great splurge of spiritual energy. And he'll see how we do with it. He'll test us and see whether it makes us more egotistical or whether it makes us more humble and in service to him. And when we pass that test, then perhaps he gives us something more. And in that way, we grow spiritually. So it's just as important to know how to receive as it is to give. So as you can tell, there are so many aspects to this in a life. But the main thing is we learn how to love God. That is the greatest gift that we can have. And we don't do it because he's going to pour riches on us, or because he's going to make us famous in this world, or anything else, make everybody love us. That doesn't happen. What happens is that as you give freely of your love to God, God gives freely of his love to you. And you feel complete. You feel whole. You feel perfect in that love. And this is the summation of the greatest gift that we can give, is giving to God our hearts, our minds, our souls, with all of our strength. And when we do that, we receive everything in return, for God has created everything there is, and we receive that. I heard a saying one time that said, I wish I was rich enough so I could live like a poor man. It's an interesting thought. And if you had this huge riches and then you could just walk around like an average income person or even a poor person, but you know that in your bank account you have all this wealth, and it instantly, anytime you need it, you can draw on it. So it allows you to live like a poor person, but in complete peace and ease. And even to a greater degree, this is what it is like to have God as your beloved. You have this immense bank account that is instantly available to you, and it is called God. And any time you need it, it comes flowing to you or to those who need it who are around you. So let us think on this, meditate upon it, ponder on it, experiment with it. You know, all the greatest ideas in the world are worthless unless you put them into practice. So think about this and really put it into practice. Experiment with it just day to day. Watch your mind. Watch the activities that you do. Watch in what ways you give. And then pay attention to that invisible tally sheet above you, where you're calculating what you've given and what you should get in return. And then experiment with throwing the tally sheet out and just giving for the sake of giving, tuning into God and feel how he directs you to give. Now, you may not have any money, but as Master said, you can always be a smile millionaire. So you can give a smile to someone. You can give a helping hand to someone. You can give some encouraging words. It's just not about money, you know. That's just our material consciousness. There are so many ways to live and to give. And so experiment with this and go deeper into it, understanding yourself so that you can be a true and fit instrument of giving by God into this material creation and into all forms of creation. It's the most tremendous gift that you can give to yourself. And now if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he. Great light within you, and that you may be a giver of light to one and to all.